This presentation is brought to you by iAwaken.org, a not-for-profit organization. We hope you enjoy the presentation. Please observe the copyright terms to which you have agreed.
That evil guy who we blame for everything wrong that we do. And we discover that he doesn't exist as a separate entity outside of ourselves. It's something that we have to go fighting somewhere out there. But that he's very much part of ourselves. He doesn't have a personality at all. But that he really is merely the confusion that results from unclear vision. That plus a touch of desire for a particular experience constitutes the danger of the Yetzer Hara. That doesn't mean that he is no great force. That doesn't mean that one doesn't need to reckon with him and to learn how to handle him. All we established last week was that the means of handling him is not to go fighting him with cannons. The means of handling him is to improve our vision. That when we're busy weighing something up, when we're busy deciding whether or not to do something that we think perhaps we oughtn't to do, that we make sure that we're seeing all the factors and that we're seeing clearly. Now this creates a very serious practical problem. If the Yetzer Hara operates like shochad, like bribery, which is Ya'aver Enei Pikhim, it blinds the eyes of clever people, how do you know that the Yetzer Hara is operating? If it's a force within you that you can feel and it's calling out to you, come and be a devil and do something naughty for a change, and you know that you're doing something naughty, then you know that you've got something to fight. You know that there's an image, and you know that you're in danger, you need to do something. If, however, it's merely a question of not seeing clearly, then how do you even know that the Yetzer Hara is? And the biggest situations of Yetzer Hara arise not even when one wants to do something terribly wrong, but even when one's just busy weighing things up in terms of the rightness or wrongness of anything, especially where one has a negia, where one has some kind of subjective interest in the outcome of one's weighing up. That's where the big danger is, that the Yetzer Hara becomes a factor and that one's weighing up is not accurate. And one does things which one really genuinely believes are 100% for the cause and l'shem shamayim and are great and tremendous to do. One really believes that. And at the end of the story, it's just the Yetzer Hara blocking out another part of your vision so that there's a little bit less that you can see with accuracy. The best example of how difficult it is to notice that the Yetzer Hara is operating is, imagine a situation which some of you might in fact have experienced. Excuse me. A man who's fallen in love with a non-Jewish girl. Then try and persuade him that's not a good idea. It's just his Yetzer Hara. He doesn't believe you. And he's not open to negotiation. And he's not open to discussion. So you're going to say, yes, but the Yetzer Hara has got into him, so now he must see a little bit more clearly. So how are you going to make him see more clearly? What can you do to open his eyes? Nothing. When a man's blind, he's blind. There's nothing you can do. And this is the big problem of the Yetzer Hara. Number one, having established that its method of operation is simply a blinding system, it closes your eyes to certain facts which you should be aware of, the question arises, how are you now to become aware of when it's operating? And how do you counteract it? What do you do about it? And that's what we're going to discuss this evening. The handling of the Yetzer Hara once it attacks, and preventative measures as well, how one avoids being blinded by the Yetzer Hara. Now, it's said to start, Ki seitzei la milchomo alo yovecho. If you go, when you go out to war against your enemies, in the plural, and Hashem Elokecho will give him into your hands, and you will take captives. The grammar's wrong. If you're going out against your enemies, then God should give them into your hands. If God's giving him into your hands, then you're going after your enemy, not after your enemies. The first question. And then you know how the Sidra develops. The story goes on, and you see a girl there with whom you fall in love, and you want to marry her as a woman, as a wife, and you've got to bring her home and shave off her hair and cut her nails and take off her attractive clothes, and she must mourn her parents for 30 days, and then you can have her as a wife. The Sifri says, it's brought in the Yalkut Shimoni, Unesonai Hashem Elokecha Beyodecha, and God will give him into your hands. Im Asisa Kol Ha'omur Be'inyan, Sof Shashem Elokecha Nosnoi Beyodecha. If you will do whatever you're instructed to do in the parsha, then God will deliver the enemy into your hands. Ask the Klayoka, that's weird. What are we talking about here? When do you get the woman? When do you fall in love with her? After you've won the war already. After you've been delivered the enemy into your hands. And then you're told what to do. What does the Medrash come and tell us? What does the Sifri come and tell us? If you will do what you're told to do here, then God will deliver your enemies into your hands. It's just a weird Medrash. It doesn't make any sense at all. Says the Klayoka, Alan, that might be for me, and I might have to take it if it is. Says the Klei Yoko, Kitete l'milchom alo yavecha. When you go out to war against your enemies, what's the danger of war? And we're not talking only about physical war, about shooting and killing one another. We're talking about any situation of challenge. The big danger is during the victorious hours. The big danger is when you're winning. In fact, one of the reasons that Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur falls at this time of the year is because we're just busy gathering in the harvest at this time, overseas. It's the end of the summer period, and it's the time when the farming community have their whole year's income in their pockets. From now on, they've got no income until next summer. So they whole, imagine that a man earns $50,000 a year, and he gets 50,000 in notes and puts it into his pocket. That's how he's feeling at this time of the year. It's all in his pocket. And that's a very dangerous feeling. That's why Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur is here. That's a time that man has to start taking stock of himself, that he has to analyze himself, that he has to look at himself and see his situation in relationship to the Ribbono Shel Olam very clearly. The big danger in war is the moments of victory when you're busy winning. That's when there's the big danger. And who's the danger from? Not from the enemy. Then the danger is from the Yetzer Hara itself. And it says the Klei Yoko when it says, Unason noy Hashem Elokecha biyadecha, it's not the enemy who God is going to deliver into your hands. It's the Yetzer Hara. Please excuse me one moment. I've just got to take this call. I won't be more than a moment. This is the way we first read it. Mr. Katz, the seat right up here. Ki tetele milchoma alo yevecha, when you go out to war against your enemies, those are the real physical enemies, don't worry about the Yetzer Hara. The Ribbono Shel Olam will deliver the Yetzer Hara into your hand. V'shavisa shivyo, you will master and capture your own Yetzer Hara. Says the Medrash, says the Sifri, that's if you do what you're told to do. If you carry out the formula laid out in this parsha, you don't have to worry about the effects of the Yetzer Hara at critical times such as victory in war. We'll be alright, you'll be okay. But you've got to do it this way. What's the way? We're told, firstly, you'll see in captivity a beautiful woman, the choshak tova. The choshak tova means you become infatuated with her. Completely irrationally. Just fall head over heels for her. The lokata l'chol yisho, and you want to take her as a wife. Then what do you have to do? The haveso el toich beisecho, you must bring her into your home. The gilcho es rosho, and you must shave her hair. The osaso, she must shave her hair. The osaso es tziponeo, she must do her nails. The hesido es simlat shivyo me'oleo, she must remove the dress of her captivity from off her. The yoshbo beisecho, and she must sit in your home. Uvachso es alvio ve'es imo yerach yomim, and she must cry for her mother and father for a month of days. Thereafter, you can have relations with her, and she may be for you as a wife. That's what you've got to do. Very strange. Since when does the Torah say, look, okay, you're out and war there and you're falling in love with the shiksa, you can marry her if you just do it the right way? Since when? Since when does the Torah create this flexibility to do things which clearly it doesn't approve of? Says the Gemara in Kiddushin, and the Rashi brings it here, Lo dibra Torah elo keneged yetzer hara. The Torah is only making a concession for the yetzer hara. That's all. It's not really, it's not the right thing to do, and it's not a good thing to do, and the Torah doesn't approve of it. But for the yetzer hara, what can you do? As the Gemara says there, rather let him do it the right way than do it the wrong way. Now, first of all, we spoke last night, some of you will remember, about the concept of remaining within a halachic framework, even at times, at moments of actually doing an aveira. Even while you're doing wrong, there's a way of doing wrong in such a way that you remain within a halachic framework. But there's something much deeper over here. There's almost an insinuation that this parsha is not a parsha about a shvuya. This parsha is not a parsha about a woman that somebody met in warfare, etc., etc. This parsha is about the Yetzer Hara. Keneged Yetzer Hara Dibra Torah. The Torah is not talking about an Eishes Yifas Torah. That's just the illustration that the Torah is using. Keneged Yetzer Hara Dibra Torah. The Torah, the subject of this parsha, what we're really discussing is the Yetzer Hara, not the woman. A means of handling the Yetzer Hara. And if that's what the Gemara means, then this is exactly where we should be looking this week. How do you handle the Yetzer Hara? Firstly, Rashi brings a proof that the Torah is not happy with it. And he brings the proof from the continuity of the parsha. Because at the end of the little piece which I've just read to you, the Chumash then says, "V'hoyoyim loychafatz tabo," and it will be if you don't like her after the period of time. And the Torah then goes on to tell you what to do if you don't like her. Says Rashi, the Torah is not really saying if you don't like her, and the Sifri says this as well. The Sifri says it's just a polite way of saying you will not like her ultimately. Why not? There is a din that one isn't a man if he wants to marry a woman, even if he's using a shadchan system, which is about the best system there is of dating. Nevertheless, he should meet his wife before he marries her, which to you might not be such a chidush, but in some parts of the world it is a chidush. Some people don't know that din. But there is a din that you've got to see your wife before you marry her. Why? Says the Gemara, because if you don't, when you marry her under the chuppah, you might find something about her that's irritating. And it's not irritating enough to divorce her. So you'll live with her. But you'll transgress the instruction of the Ahavta L'Reacha Kamocha, of loving your neighbor as yourself. To live with somebody that irritates you brings sin. It brings hatred. There's just no way one can tolerate it. You can tolerate irritation in somebody who lives across the road. You can tolerate irritation in somebody who lives next door. But you can't tolerate the irritation of somebody who lives in the same room as you do. That's intolerable. And it brings to sin, or it brings to such deep resentment that it lands up as being hatred. One actually starts hating the other person. That's what the Gemara says. What did we say the Yetzer Hara does? The Yetzer Hara blinds. You can't see what you're doing. He's infatuated with a woman. That means he wants to live with a woman. He wants to take a woman as a wife whom he hasn't fully seen. He's seen with blind eyes. And I think maybe that's part of what the Gemara means, because you're quite right if you say, what kind of a chiddush is that? Of course a man should see his wife before he marries her. What kind of man will marry a woman he hasn't seen? The stress is, see her with open eyes, not with blind eyes. If you're in love, you can't see her. Don't think you're mekayim that Gemara if you're infatuated with a girl and you say, no, but the Gemara says you must see her before you get married. So we're going out, we've been going out for 3 years, and we'll go out for another 3 years. It says you must see her. Doesn't help. Firstly, the Gemara says you must see her, you must see her once or twice, and have to see her for years and years. But secondly, I'm talking where there is a competent shatkin involved. But secondly, the stress of the word is Ad sheroya osa. He's got to see her. He's got to perceive her. He's got to see her objectively, and not see her from a state of being infatuated, because then he won't see properly. And that's why here we've got the same situation. He's marrying an Ashes Yafas Torah. He's marrying this captive that he picked up in the war, and he's infatuated with her. And Kineged Yetzirah Dibra Torah. And how does the Yetzirah operate? It just closes one eye. That means he's marrying a woman whom he hasn't seen. The ultimate must be sin. As a result of that, there's going to develop hatred. So what we do to try and help him out? Firstly, says the Torah, V'haveso el toich beisech. Take her into the middle of your home. El toich beisech. Then when you bring her home, don't just introduce her to your parents at the front door. Take her right inside and have her sit in the dining room table and see how she fits in and see how she relates there. And you see her in that context, because that's where you come from after all. That's real living. The drive-in is not real living. And the Sterkineke was also not real living, nor is a restaurant. Real living is in the home where you've grown up in a similar kind of home, more or less, as to the home that you're going to create for your children. So see her there. That's the first thing. What we want to do is we want this man to see her. That's all. If after you've seen her, you still love her, okay. But do us a favor. You've just come back from war and you're infatuated and you're in love. Just see her. So the first thing, Bahaveso el toich beisech. Take her right into the home situation. Don't see her in the romantic situation of some foreign town that you conquered. There you were with all the boys, and the girls came out to greet you and to bring you food and drink and sit with you and sing with you into the night. Don't think of her in that context, because once you're married, that's over. Think of her el toich beisech. See her in the context of your home. That's number one. And the Gemara says that the Torah doesn't say imagine her in the middle of your home. The Gemara says v'haveso, drag her in. And she'll say she doesn't want to, and she doesn't fit into that kind of background. And darling, we're not going to be like your parents after all, so it doesn't really matter. And our home is going to be different, and they're not really liberated, and they don't understand, and they're just going to turn against me in any case because I'm not Jewish. So let's keep away from your home. Schlep her right into the home, and then you'll see who she is and how she is. Next, the Gilchos Rosh. Next thing, tell her to cut her hair off. That seems a weird thing to do also. It's not normal Jewish practice. We're actually warned against such practices. Considered the most ugly, horrible thing to do. But as I was saying to the ladies this morning, and I beg their apologies for repeating, hair is a funny thing. I gave them two examples. The one example was our very own dog. He's a cute animal, a most lovable, huggable, roly-poly sheepdog, long hair. But once his hair got tangled up and it had to be shorn, it had to be cut off. And he went through an amazing crisis, because some of you might remember this in the days that the Beis HaMedrash used to be in our home. All of a sudden, everybody used to be playing with him and talking to him, and even on Shabbos, people used to go out of their way to say good Shabbos to him, and the kids used to play with him. And he felt loved. All of a sudden, nobody came near him. He looked as ugly as anything. And it took a long time after his hair grew again to forget that under all that beautiful hair there was just that measly little body that looked as ugly as anything. And he never got over the psychological effects of that experience. And I realized then what hair can do. It can turn an ugly mongrel into a beautiful, cuddly animal. He's not really a mongrel, but that's what he looked like when his hair was off. And the other example is, you know, you'll see children and you'll see ladies in the gardens in Cape Town walking up and down with nuts, feeding squirrels. And the squirrels come up to them, they play with the squirrels and they try to cute. And those same ladies, a mouse will run across them and they'll yell and they'll shriek. And what's the difference between a mouse and a squirrel? One's got a fluffy tail, that's all. Same animal. One's got a fluffy tail, he looks cute. That's what hair can do. It can take the most ugly, unbelievable. It can take the most ugly of creatures and it can make it look cute. It can really make it look cute. So we say, number one, having brought her to the home, take her hair off. See her as she really is, without the facade of sexual appeal. Just see her as she really is, without the hair. Take off the fluffy tail. Let's have a look at the mouse underneath it and see. If you still like the mouse, then marry the mouse. After that, the also saw is tzipor nail. Now there's a fascinating machlokes as to what this means. She must do her nails. Fascinating machlokes, on which we're going to structure the whole shiur. It's a machlokes between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva in the Sifri. It says she must do her nails. What does that mean? She's got to do something with it. There's no havamina in Chazal that it means she must paint her nails. The only question is, does it mean she must grow her nails or she must cut her nails? That's the big question. Says Rabbi Akiva, what are we supposed to do with her hair? We've got to shave her hair off. Shaving her hair is ugly. Therefore, we must do to her nails what is also ugly. She must grow them. That also didn't enter Chazal's mind that ladies with long nails looked attractive. There was no havamina about that at all. In the ladies' shiur, I said that there were two views about that issue, but there aren't. I subsequently found that everybody agrees that that is ugly. The only question is that what she's meant to do? Is she meant to grow her nails into ugly claws? Or is she meant to cut them? Rabbi Eliezer says, no, what is she meant to do with her hair? She's meant to cut her hair, so she's meant to cut her nails as well. In other words, Rabbi Akiva looks at the concept behind the hair and says the concept behind cutting the hair is to make her look ugly. So with her nails, she must do that which makes nails look ugly, which is grow them long. Rabbi Eliezer says, no, you look at the action. The action is cutting the hair, therefore the action must be cutting the nails. That's the machlokes. I'll tell you still a little bit later why this is so fascinating, because it changes the whole meaning of the whole parsha and the whole philosophy behind it. This little machlokes as to whether the also so tzipor nail means she must cut her nails or she must grow her nails. But that's the next thing we do for her. Then vehisiru es simla shivyo me'alehu. When the girls heard that the conquering armies were coming in, they got dressed very attractively. That those clothes have to go out and just get put in a dressing gown. That's it. Just put in something very ordinary. The Yoshvo Beveisecha, and let us sit in your house. Uvachso esovio veesimo yerachyami, and she must cry for her mother and father for 30 days. Says Rashi, what is the Yoshvo Beveisecha? She must sit in your house. We've already said she must be brought into the midst of your home. Bevayis shemishtabesh bo. Don't find her a special apartment. You know, she will tend to say, you know, darling, this is going to be a very difficult month for me. I've got to adjust and all sorts of people and things. Let's find a flat for ourselves already. And I'll move into the flat. That's where I'll spend the month mourning my parents' owner. Into your house, she moves in. Where you are found daily, that's where you've got to be. Nichnas v'nitkalbo. When he comes home, who must he bump into? This darling girl without hair and with the long nails and with the no nails in the nightgown, looking miserable, crying away. That's who he's going to see as he opens the front door. Yotze. Okay, so he's just getting used to it. He's going out now to work in the morning. V'nitkalbo. There she must be at the door in her nightgown, not with curlies in her head, but with nothing in her head, and no makeup on, and tears running down her face. That's who he's going to bump into as he goes out. Roya bevichiyoso, he must see her crying. Roya benivulo, he must see her ugly. Kadeshit is gane olav, in order that she should be ugly and unattractive to him. We're not being very romantic here. We're trying to be brutal with him. We're trying to shock him. Uvachto es avia kol kach lama, asks Rashi, 30 days does this have to go on for? What's the big thing for 30 days? Normally, how long does one cry for a parent? A shiver, there's a week. Yeah, then there's shloshim, but it's not the same degree. Here she's going to sit in her state of ultimate mourning, with her hair in such a state, and her clothes, not the right clothes that she's wearing, and unkempt, she's going to sit for 30 days. Why? Kadesh etahe bat Yisrael samecha v'zuat tevo. As Yisrael mitkasheses v'zu mitnaveh. So it's to give him a whole month of going out to work and meeting all the most attractive, lovely, gay, happy, good-looking girls, and coming home night after night to this miserable wretch without any hair who's sitting and crying. And he must leave in the morning, and what does he leave? He leaves this miserable wretch, and he opens the front door, and he goes out, and at the bus stop already there's a whole crowd of gay girls, and they're talking and chattering and singing and look beautiful and attractive. And eventually he'll start seeing, it must be the sugar, and go and choose the one from the other. That's the way we treat him, that's what we do. What we're doing is, we're stripping the object of the Yetzer Hara of everything which the Yetzer Hara could possibly find appealing. That's what we did. And we're saying, if there's still some attractiveness after all that, okay, then it's not the Yetzer Hara, then it might be real. But if there's nothing after that, you know it's the Yetzer Hara. That's really the test of life. A man has to imagine his wife, Chas V'Sholom, in this state. And he should imagine this going on for a whole month. And he's going out and he meets all these pretty girls outside. And he comes back and this is what he finds at home. Could he handle it? If he can't, that's no love. That's infatuation. It's not real love. So what are we doing with the Yetzer Hara here? We're saying, look, what the Yetzer Hara has done is blinded you to the facts. To make you see the facts by giving you information, that won't help. You're blind. You won't see the information. All we can do is shock you. Take away what you were seeing. That's what we'll do. We can't give you more. We can't add to your vision because you're blind. What we'll do is we'll take away that little bit which you could see. And now tell us what's left. That way at least we can do something. If you just saw a gorgeous girl with long hair and everything beautiful and in lovely dresses and gay and happy and singing with you out there in this foreign village on the riverside that you just conquered after a hard battle, and she was bringing you lovely cold beer to drink and you were sitting and relaxing, if that's what you saw, we'll take all that away. Now what can you see? Nothing. You see how blind you are. There's a human being in front of you and you can't see her. You're not attracted to her anymore. That's because it was only the Yetzer Hara. You weren't seeing properly. You weren't seeing everything. And now we've taken away what you saw, the illusion that you had, and there's nothing for you to see. Your eyesight is impaired. And the man begins to understand it, hopefully. So much so that when the Torah says a little bit further, it'll be if you don't want it, says Rashi, HaKosuv Mevaserecho. It's not telling you, and if you don't like her afterwards, the Torah is informing you, that the end is you will hate this woman. It will work. There's no way that it won't work. This system will work. And it's really the only guaranteed system of handling intermarried situations, where the party from the other religion is not interested, whatever, in any form of conversion. This really is the only way. It has to be shock treatment. There's no way you can rationalize and talk to the person concerned. Is that the only thing we can do? Because this is pretty drastic. And what does that mean? That if you've got a Yetzer Hara to eat a trait piece of steak, so go, okay, go to the restaurant, sit down, and when your steak comes, take the pepper pot and pour all the pepper on it, and pour some cold water on it, and pour whatever other mush you can get onto it, make it look miserable, make it taste miserable, and eat it. Is that, obviously you won't eat it. Is that the only way that we can handle the Yetzer Hara? Is it as drastic as that? There are really two Gemaras about handling the Yetzer Hara. The one Gemara fits in very nicely with this is the Gemara that I brought you last night. In Roya Odon, the Gemara says in Moed Kotten Daf Yud Zayin. In Roya Odon, she Yitzroim is Gaber Olof. If a man sees that his Yetzer Hara is getting the better of him, he is going to go and do something very naughty tonight, and he's decided, and that's the end of it. It's going to happen. He knows it. Then at least Yelech Lamokum She'ein Makirinus. At least go to a place where nobody knows you. Don't do it in a place where you're well known. The Yilbash Chirim. And wear black clothes. Don't get yourself a special suit for the occasion, and it should be a dark black suit. Beyisatev shchorim, and get yourself a black talus and wrap yourself up in that. Beyasir mashalibay chofetz, and go and do what you want. But ba'al yechal el shem shemayim b'parhesia, don't cause chilul Hashem in public. The Rishonim discuss what exactly this means. Does this mean you may then go and do the Avera? And most Rishonim say, Chas v'sholom, of course not. This isn't a guide as to how to do wrong. You know, as long as you dress in black, you can go and do what you want. As I said last night, since today, from people all dress in black, that would give them a header to do what they want all the time. It's not that at all. It's an assurance that if you've decided to do an Avera, and you'll just become a little bit conscious about what you're doing. Get dressed in serious clothes, not in flippant clothes. Get dressed in heavy clothes, dark clothes. And get into your car and go far away where nobody knows you. You'll start asking yourself, why am I going to where nobody knows me? Because I'm embarrassed. So in the end it's wrong, that I know. If it was right, I would be happy to do it where I live. So already once confronting the fact that it's wrong, that way you'll begin to see some of the wrong of what you do. And this system is a very similar system to the one we have in the parasha here. In doing the Aveira, just do it in a way that brings, in a shockingly real method, to you, the fact that what you're doing is so hopelessly wrong. But there's another Gemara which uses a different mechanism. This is the Gemara in Sukkah, in Pogah B'chol Menuvel there. If this awful individual, the Yetzer gets hold of you, Moshcheil LeBeis HaMedrash. Take him with you to the Beis HaMedrash. Sit down and learn. What do you learn? Firstly, learning anything helps. But the best thing to learn is learn the sugya of the Avera you're about to do. If you're going to talk Lashon Hara, if you feel that you're about to talk Lashon Hara, open those Gemaras, deal with it, and just sit as an intellectual exercise. Tell yourself that you've decided you're doing it. You're not even trying to negotiate with yourself anymore. You're doing it. But before you do it, you're just going through some Gemaras, just going to learn a little bit, just for an intellectual exercise. You won't do it. When you've understood it and you've sit and you've worked through the Gemara, you won't do it. A person wants to be Mechalel Shabbos. He's got a big Nisoyim, he's got a big trial. All he's got to do is answer the phone 10 seconds after Shabbos comes in. And he's just got to say yes or no. That's all he's got to do. And with that he makes R1 million. He can support 10 yeshivas and retire for the rest of his life. All he's got to do is pick up the phone, and he won't even pick up the phone. He'll get the girl, he'll get the maid to pick up the phone. And she'll put it down. All he has to do is to say into the phone yes or no. And that will clinch a deal which will make you $1 million, and it's finished. That's all he has to do. Before you do it, go through Hilchos Shabbos a little bit. Learn the dinim of a telephone and how it works and why it's osur and whether you can speak and whether it makes a difference if somebody else holds it or doesn't. Just get into it a little bit. You'll turn the deal down. That's how it works. Once you immerse yourself intellectually in it, you'll turn it down. But what is the mechanism really? What are you doing when it says, Moshcheyun lebeis HaMedrash, take your Yetzer Hara into the Beis HaMedrash? That's a funny lotion, it's a funny language. Why doesn't it just say, you go to the Beis HaMedrash? Why doesn't it say, take your Yetzer Hara with you? The two of you go into the Beis HaMedrash. What the Gemara is talking about is the Shir 2 weeks ago. Get into your simulator, that's all. You want to do an Aveira? Do it in the simulator. Take the Gemaras, go through the whole intellectual concept of what it is you're doing in reality, and do it in your imagination. See yourself doing it. Understand each issue that you're doing, and understand each Gemara you're going against, and each paragraph of Shulchan Aruch that you're breaking, and see yourself doing it in reality. And you won't have to dress up in black clothes. It won't be necessary. That's the method of Moshcheil LeBeis HaMedrash. So the method given here in Kitetze is the real method. If you don't have a simulator, you're out at war. You don't have time to go and sit in your study or in your Beis HaMedrash and take down all your sforim and go through the whole sugya. It takes hours and hours to do that. You're in war, you're fighting, the guns are going. It's true, you're winning, you're making good progress, but that still doesn't mean you can stop and go through the whole sugya of Eishes Ish and of a goy and of this and of that. And it's the sectors you'll have to go through. You haven't got the time for that. So there you've got to do it the real way. Take the girl, take her home, cut her hair off, blow her nails, the whole story. But if you have the time, then Moshcheil LeBeis HaMedrash. Do it in the Beis HaMedrash. Do it in your imagination. You don't have to go through the physical action. Just see yourself doing it. Learn through the sugya. Learn through the concepts. See yourself breaking those concepts And that's all you'll need to do. You'll be able to handle the Yetzer Hara very nicely. Because again, your vision will be restored. That's the other beauty of the simulator. You can see well in the simulator because it's not real. There you can see. And we have a very sophisticated simulator that we use. You can be videotaped while you're doing it. So you can go through the whole process and videotape it, and then you can sit back and you can watch yourself doing it. Very sophisticated and it's very useful. Not only can you experience the whole thing, but then you can then sit back and see yourself having done it. And it turns one off. That's all. Having seen that, it's enough, and one doesn't have any inclination to go, because one's seen dispassionately with one's full eyesight. And when you see an avera with your full eyesight, you don't do it. But is there another way of handling the yetzer hara? And this is where we come to this machlokes Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva learned the way we've learned, that the also saw as tziponeo means she must grow her nails because that's ugly, and it fits in with shaving off all her hair. Says Rabbi Eliezer, no, she had to shave her hair, therefore obviously what she had to do to her nails is cut them. But then the whole thing doesn't work. I understand why you've got to bring her into your home. I understand why you've got to shave off her hair. All that is to make her look ugly. I understand why she's got to mourn for her parents, to make her look ugly and miserable. But if we decide that short fingernails are attractive, how does that fit in? That requirement that she should trim her fingernails, how does that fit in with the rest of the story? Therefore, we have to say that according to Rabbi Eliezer, we're not looking nearly as negatively at this whole thing as we are according to Rabbi Akiva. And in fact, that's how the Ramban learns. Ramban, right through the whole parsha, looks at the Ramban and the Sipurnu as well, learns that there's nothing wrong with this Yifatua, this girl. He wants to marry her. We want to be sure that it's for real. So she has to go through a certain process. We'll define in a moment what that process is. But if she's going to convert, she wants to become a convertee, why not? And he wants to marry her, you're allowed to marry a Giyoris, he's not a Kohen. There's nothing negative. One doesn't have to see this as the embodiment of the Yetzer Hara, and it's all wickedness and evil, and it's all to try and distract him. Not necessarily at all. It's talking about a situation where a man goes into war, meets a girl there who he thinks would make a good wife for him. We're not sure whether it's suitable or it isn't suitable. He goes through the various tests, and if he wants to, he marries her, fine. And here the Or HaChaim has a beautiful system of learning the whole parasha, which is completely different to the way we've just learned it. And I'll show you how he learns the parasha. He says, firstly, why does it start with this business? And it will be if you go out into war against your enemies, and God will give them into your hands, and you will take captives, and among the captives you will find a pretty woman, etc., etc. Why such a long introduction, asks the Or HaChaim. Let the Chumash just say, if you find a woman among your captives who is attractive to you, etc., etc., it doesn't have to tell you. Obviously, you're at war if you've got captives. Says the Or HaChaim, telling you, you're going out to war against your enemies. War is it? Even though it's a milchemes reshus, it's not a milchemes mitzvah. It's a voluntary war. The state has decided to go to war. But even a milchemes reshus is a great mitzvah. If the country has to fight the war because they're being threatened or for whatever reason, okay, that's also a big mitzvah. Who are the people that go into that war? Only big tzaddikim. Only righteous people go and fight. We turn away all the people who might not be up to the standard, up to the moral standard of being able to fight the war. So we've got some great people here doing a mitzvah. Says the Or HaChaim, is it possible that they're yet to horror, that they're going to fall to something so low? And that's the obvious question on the parasha altogether. So the Or HaChaim, it's not possible. There's no way that people on this stature, busy doing a mitzvah, could fall for the Yetzer Hara like that. Can't be. So how do you understand the parasha? So he throws in a tiny little bit of Kabbalah, which I won't explain to you, but I'll give you. That is, he says, there's one explanation as to the existence of converts. How does it work? Why is a person a convert? if a Jew has a different soul to a non-Jew, how does a non-Jew suddenly change into a Jew? So one of the explanations that the Zohar gives is that at the time of the Chet of Adam Arishon, right at the beginning of history, the Sitra Achra, which is a power which we're not going to explain, but it's a power of evil, so to say, in the world, captured certain souls, certain neshamas, and kept them separate from the future Jewish people. It didn't allow these souls ever to be born into Jews. These souls were later born into non-Jews who become converts at a later stage. That's how it happens. Says the Orach Chaim, there are two situations where Kedusha, where holiness, can become attached to an unholy situation. The one is the example of, you'll remember, where Shechem ben Hamor had, he raped Dinah, the daughter of Yaakov. There the Kabbalah says, it was a very important event. There was a tiny spot of Kedusha in the neshama, in the soul of Shechem ben Hamor. And that had to be gotten out and brought into the Jewish people. And that one relationship did it. Thereafter Shechem was left as he was, a man, Betsiya Tumah, at the depths of Tumah and defilement, with no Kedusha whatever. Whatever Kedusha he had now been transferred through Dinah into the Jewish people. That's one kind of situation you have. The other kind is like Ruth, where you have a woman who is a non-Jewish woman, and she is Kuli Kurdish. She has to be absorbed into the Jewish people completely. Not that there's a part of her that must be absorbed into the Jewish people, but she as a personality has to be absorbed completely into the Jewish people. Those are two situations. Says the Orach Chaim, if a man is busy in a milchemes mitzvah, a great man, a lamdan, a talmid chacham, and a tzaddik, is busy, he's going out on a mission of kedusha, a mission of holiness, he's doing a mitzvah, and he sees a pretty girl, what do you think? He's fallen for the pretty girl? That's not. If he's fallen for the pretty girl, that's a sign that there's more than superficial prettiness in that girl. If a tzaddik can fall for a girl like that, she's got something. She's not an ordinary shiksa who happens to be running around. This is a girl who has something which a tzaddik finds attractive. You've got to bring her in. That might be one of those people who needs to be incorporated into the Jewish people. So immediately she's brought in, and the din is, as the Rambam paskins, the first thing that happens to this woman, even before her hair is cut off and all the rest of it, as she's brought into his home, the first thing is, they have one relationship. Thereafter they may not have any further relationship until this whole process has gone through. But one relationship they have. Says the Orach Chaim, now if the purpose was just to have one relationship with her because she had some touch of Kedusha which had to be brought into the Jewish people, that's a given, it's been done. Now comes the test. Now let's see if the tzaddik still likes her. If the tzaddik still likes her, then it's a sign that she's like Ruth. She's a person who has to be brought into the Jewish people in her entirety. If the tzaddik no longer likes her, that's a sign that what he liked in her is now out of her. This is Kabbalah, so one doesn't have to understand it right up to the end, just to understand the system of thinking. Back there's a snag. Now he's not doing a mitzvah anymore. The war is over. He's back home. Says the Orach Chaim, only when a tzaddik is busy doing a mitzvah will I guarantee you that he won't fall for his yetzer hara. But when the tzaddik's finished doing the mitzvah, he's like anybody else, and he could fall for the yetzer hara. How is he going to test her now? So he's brought this girl home, and he's had a relationship with her. And after that he says, you know, I still find something attractive in her. I still find I like her. Now we don't know. Now it might be you like her because she still has something inherently good that needs to be brought into the Jewish people. Or maybe you like her because you're a human being, and she's a pretty girl. Now we've got a test. And now we cut off her hair, and now we make her cry for her parents. And what she's crying for her parents is the Ramban, this whole system, the Ibn Ezra, this whole system is an act of mourning and breaking away from what she's lost. It's not just that we're making her go through some kind of a game that he should see her in an ugly state. We're not worried about that. We want her to go through the whole process of breaking away from her parents. At the same time, we want him to see her in a very drab human situation and say, right, tzaddik, now if after this she still likes you and you still like her, then there's really something in it. If after living with her like this for a month, you still find yourself attracted to her and she still finds herself attracted to you, then there's something. That's the test that we give her. If there's nothing, then you've got to send her away. And the Orach Chaim even points out the particular words that are used. V'hayan, it will be im loy chafat daba. After this whole process, if you don't like, it's not ota, you don't like her, but lo chafat daba, you don't like what's in her, then v'shilach tal anafsho, you must send her away. What's beautiful about this Orach Chaim is that there is a way to avoid the Yetzer Hara. We've talked about two ways to handle the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara attacks you, you begin to get a little bit blind. You can't see clearly. There are two things to do. Either climb into your simulator and go through the whole sugya, go through the whole parasha, learn the whole thing through, and see yourself in the situation of doing wrong, and you won't do wrong. That's the one possibility. The other possibility is, if you don't have the opportunity to do it in the simulator, go out and do it for real, but dress up in black and make the thing look as unattractive as possible. And see it for what it really is. See the contrast. And you won't do the Aveira either. That's how you handle the Yetzer Hara. But now with the Orach Chaim system of learning, just because of the different understanding of Va'asita Tziporneha, they have a new thing altogether. If you're busy doing a mitzvah, if you're on a reasonable spiritual level, at moments of busy doing a mitzvah, you don't have to worry about the Yetzer Hara. It's not there. And if you feel something, that feeling is genuine and it's holy. And you don't have to worry, maybe what I feel is the Yetzer Hara. The Vilna Gaon, when he used to take any major decision, either on his own behalf or on behalf of other people, what he used to do was he used to lock himself up for 7 hours and learn continuously, non-stop, for 7 hours. With all his koach, with everything he had, he put into those 7 hours. And when the 7 hours were over, he closed his Gemara and he made a decision immediately. Without weighing up. His weighing up he did before. He then learnt with all he had for 7 hours and he made a decision. And he said he knew, misled by his Yetzer Hara. And that's a fantastic thing to know. That means when we're standing in Shul on Rosh Hashanah on Yom Kippur, if we just prepared ourselves a little bit for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, we come there with some kind of decent spiritual level. We're not just like we are right through the year. We've worked on ourselves a little bit. We're a bit sharper. We're not so dull and dreary as we are during the year. We're spiritually a little bit more alert. We've been learning a bit more. We've been more sensitive. We've tried a little bit harder to notice other people and their problems and to respond to those other people and their problems in our homes, outside of our homes. We've controlled our moods and tempers a little bit. We've been a little bit less irritable. We've put in effort into growth. So we're busy growing as Rosh Hashanah hits us. And then we envelop ourselves into this atmosphere of Rosh Hashanah. And we make sure that over Rosh Hashanah we don't speak a word of Lashon Hara. And we don't say anything that's untrue or anything that's unnecessary. That we don't hurt anybody. That we don't offend anybody. That everything we did, at least during those 2 days, is as far as we're capable of achieving. 100% b'tahara, 100% impurity. And before Rosh Hashanah we'd been to the mikveh and we'd purified ourselves completely. The thoughts you'll have on Rosh Hashanah, the plans you'll make, the understandings and perceptions you'll achieve, will be 100% pure. No Yetzer Hara mixed up in those. When a man's been learning, or when a woman finds herself in a situation of spirituality where she feels she's getting somewhere, she doesn't have to worry, and he doesn't have to worry, that he's got all sorts of other funny motives. When one's on a high spiritual level, you don't have to worry. Whatever your feelings are and your motives are, they're likely to be accurate, they're likely to be true. What I'm saying is a little bit dangerous, because one has to know that one is on that level. And the Yetzer Hara has a way of blinding one, closing one eye. And it can blind one with that as well. You can think that you're on the level and you're not. But in theory, it's possible, very practical and relatively easy to get to that point at any stage of one's life, or on any particular day, or any time of any particular day, to build oneself up to a level where one's intuitive, natural feelings are feelings of kedusha and not feelings of tumah. They're feelings of holiness and purity, and they're not feelings of defilement and impurity. There's another section of the shiur which I'm going to take you through briefly, but let me just summarize what we've done here. We've said that there's the parasha of the Eishes Yechas Torah, of this woman that's met in circumstances of war. There are two ways of learning the parasha. There's Rabbi Eliezer's way and there's Rabbi Akiva's way. Rabbi Akiva's way, cutting the nails means making them long to make her ugly. Why are we trying to make her ugly? To shock him into the reality of what he's doing. This man is infatuated with a woman with whom he should never be infatuated, and we need to somehow break the relationship, and the only way we can do it is show the comparisons between what he's got and the women that he could have, the women outside that whom he could marry. And so we shock him into this kind of realization. We said that's the one way of handling the Yetzer Hara. Either you really dress up in black garments and you go to some strange place and do the Avera far away in order to shock you into the reality of what you're doing, or Moshcheyo the Beis HaMedrash, take the Avera into the Beis HaMedrash and do it in your imagination in the Beis HaMedrash, and you won't find that you're going to do it in actuality. And then we had the other system of learning, which is Rabbi Eliezer, that cutting the fingers is not growing them long, but cutting them, and it's not to make her ugly. The purpose of this whole thing is not to make her ugly. The purpose of this whole thing is only to examine if after their original relationship there is still Kedusha in this woman or not. And we make her go through a process of mourning her past, during which time she realizes that if she's going to commit herself to the marriage, she has no chelek in her past. And he realizes what kind of a woman this is because he sees her in very unromantic circumstances. And that together enables him afterwards to be sure that his decision, if it's going to be a decision to marry her, is a genuine one and is not one of the Yetzer Hara. These are the two ways of learning the parasha. I said to the ladies this morning, and again I beg their forgiveness, but I think that this is very important to see and to do. Let's forget the Or HaChaim's way for a moment, as beautiful as it is and as important as it is, because it's a bolt of light as far as I'm concerned. Not lightning, but light. Just this understanding that the Yetzer Hara only affects you when you're not where you should be. It's feasible simply by building up your level to escape the influence of the Yetzer Hara completely. It's a wonderful thing, that Or HaChaim. But leave it for a moment. Let's take Rashi's way. Rashi is a simple way, and he follows Rabbi Akiva's way. Can we open a couple of windows there? Thanks. We're trying to make a contrast. We're trying to make a contrast between this woman at home and the women outside. The purpose of the contrast is to make sure he doesn't marry this girl. That's all. We're satisfied. The Torah is mevaserecha haTorah. The Torah informs you that you'll come to hate her. This is for sure. So we have now a guaranteed method of getting to hate your spouse. Right? This is how you do it. The first thing is, you take her into your home. Right? Okay? I want you now to think of this in terms of real wives, not Eishes Yechas Torah. What do we do with our women? So we take them into the home. So all the romantic dating system, already everything's changed. We saw them at their best. They used to dress up before we took them out. We took them out to a romantic setting, and that's where we got to know them. After the chuppah, we get to know them in the kitchen, and changing nappies, and cleaning up, and working hard, and getting frustrated and miserable, being tired sometimes. Yeah, now and then one takes them out and the couple will go and spend a nice romantic evening. The first year of their marriage it might happen a few times. The second year of their marriage it might happen once. And then until the 10th year it probably doesn't happen at all. And then things reach such a crisis that they decide they'd better do something dramatic. So they go out together, or they go on holiday together somewhere, and they do something really dramatic. And so it goes on. So we've taken the woman away from her romantic setting, and we brought her home. Okay, so far our wives took the bill. And if we started with somebody that was shaktava, we were in love when we started. We're watching the process of moving from total infatuation to sinah, to hatred. Next step, the gilchos roisha. As you know, there are some from people who actually, women actually shave their hair. We're violently opposed to that. For whatever reason they have, Reb Elia used to speak out very vehemently against that. on a simple basis, is to say, Da'achir, Da'achir, Na'an, the ways of the Torah are meant to be pleasant, not ugly. And there's no way, and here's the proof, that you can call shaving your head pleasant. The height of ugliness, we've got it here to find in a woman. Okay, but, you know, my dog, Mappy, lahavdil. Even when he's got his hair, I made one condition with my wife and myself when we got him, and that was I wasn't going to become a hairdresser for dogs. And if we got him, we had to be sure that we could afford to send him off to one of these dog hairdressers once a month to make sure that he doesn't get tangled up again. But I wasn't going to do it. And that we agreed. And so at great financial cost, we decided to go ahead. But the last few days before Maffy goes off to his beauty parlor, he's not without hair, as he was that time. And he still looks ugly. His hair is unkempt, it's dirty, and it's not combed, and it's not washed, and it doesn't look nice. And when he comes back from the hairdresser's, and you can throw your arms around him, he just looks like a doll. But before he went, he looked too terrible for words. So you don't have to think that there's only shaving off your hair or looking gorgeous. There's a lot of grey area in between. And most wives fit in somewhere in between. If their hair isn't shaved off, as I said, there's some wives that actually shave off their hair, which is bad enough. But if they don't, it's not necessarily looking the way Matthew looks when he comes back from the hairdresser, which is at least how good it should look. So the next requirement of the gilcho es roisho, of her hair being unkempt, that's unfortunately something else which our wives sometimes excel in. I'm not talking about our wives, I'm talking about in general. I explained to the ladies this morning why that is particularly among frum women, for a very simple and tragic reason. Among irreligious people, women are constantly coming into contact with members of the opposite sex, apart from their husbands. So they always want to look their best. Even if they're straight and honest women, I'm not talking about women who are having affairs or anything, but still they're meeting and people are in their homes and they're in other people's homes, and there's a certain social pressure on a woman that she should look good and attractive to members of the opposite sex. So the pressure to look good is only from her husband. And he thinks it's very holy not to put her under such pressure. So she has no such pressure. And the hard work, the difficulties of running a day-to-day life start taking their toll, and the thing which comes last is her own personal appearance. And so we've got the gilcho es roisho. If she doesn't shave her hair, it looks bad enough most of the time. Next one. We also saw tziporneha. That doesn't just mean her nails. It's makeup in general. Just doing herself up. She begins to get neglected. And finally, behesiro es simlat shivyo me'oreo. The clothes, the kind of clothes she used to wear when they used to go dating, that she never wears anymore. If he closes his eyes and thinks of her, he thinks of her in a dressing gown. Sure, she wears clothes. She wears clothes when she goes to the hypermarket to do her shopping, but then he's at work. When he leaves in the morning, she's in a dressing gown. When he comes back in the evening, she's in a dressing gown. So that's the Isiru Sim Lashivya, her attractive clothes are off. So all he thinks of her, he doesn't see his poor wife in attractive clothing. Occasionally, maybe Shabbat, she comes to shul and then she's got something or other. Maybe once a week, but if he closes his eyes and thinks of his wife, that's not what he thinks of. It's not that same gorgeous girl he used to take out. And then, and she cries for her mother and father for a man. It doesn't have to be for the mother and father that a girl is crying to make her unattractive. She can be crying for any reason. And women are under pressure and things are heavy. So he comes home from work and she's complaining, miserable, a long story of complaints. Why didn't you do this and why didn't you do that and this didn't work and that's not working and I need money and we haven't got enough this and we haven't got enough that. And so it goes. So what does he come back to? He comes back to the very apparition we're describing. An unkempt woman with her hair in a mess, unmade up, in drab, ugly clothing, and all he hears from her is complaints. And Me'idus Kisa, she's Rashi. Kol kach lama, why so much? Kedei shetei bas Yisrael tumecha, we want him to go outside and meet all the pretty dolls outside and make comparisons. That's what we want him to do with this woman. And that's what he does with his own wife. He's meeting girls whose hair he has made up. He's meeting girls who are not dressed in dressing gowns. They're looking quite smart. He's meeting girls who aren't complaining. They're stimulated. They're busy doing things. And if they have got complaints, they don't tell them to a stranger. That's who he's meeting all the time. And day after day, week after week, month after month, this starts hammering away at him. And he starts making comparisons between the girls outside and what he comes home to as he opens his front door. And it's an Eishes Yifastor. And what's the consequence of that? V'hoyo im loich ofatzta bo. Says Rashi, akosuv mevaserecho, the Torah is giving you information. Not predictions, information. She'sofcha lisnoi, so you'll come to hate her. That a man eventually comes to the thing. You say, what, a spiritual man? Is this kind of thing important to him? Seems yes. Because we're talking about spiritual men here. We're talking about great men. It turns them off. And it becomes a source of resentment because they're stuck with it. There's nothing they can do. You're not going to divorce a woman because she doesn't do her nails nicely. You're not going to divorce a woman because her hair's untidy. It's small enough that the marriage shouldn't break up because of it. And yet it's too big to keep the marriage happy. And it's the comparison that kills it. That's really what does the killing. How does it go on? Story isn't over. Next one, which Rashi says is a natural continuation, ki tiyen alish shtei noshim. The man marries another woman. In those days, that's what they used to do. They used to marry another woman. Which today, women wouldn't object to, so bring her home under the same conditions under which he sees me, I would have fair competition. Okay, she would also stand behind the stove, she would also be raising babies, and then he would realize that I wasn't so bad after all. But this kind of business, I do all the work for him at home, and he keeps her in a penthouse somewhere, with every luxury. And that's who he's comparing me to. So today, it's the same kind of thing, just it's a little bit worse. A man starts getting a mistress. And if he doesn't get her in practice, he starts thinking that way. That's the next step. Resentment with his wife, dissatisfaction, a feeling of drabness and dullness. His life is getting on. Life is not that long. He wants to enjoy himself while he's about it. One of those women is loved and one of those women is hated. And it's the first wife, of course, and he's the one who is hated. Then it goes on to tell you that if the hated woman has a child who is the Bechor, the firstborn, you have to treat him like a firstborn even though you don't like his mother. That's just tough luck. The next paragraph. Again, Rashi says, continuation. The next step is that you'll have a rebellious son. What's the definition of a rebellious son? Einenu shomea b'kol oviv o b'kol imo. That's a son who doesn't listen to his parents. That's all. That's a ben seira remora. That's not a halachic ben seira remora. Legally, in order to execute this kid, you need all sorts of other requirements as well. But conceptually, what is a ben seira remora? Einenu shomea b'kol oviv o b'kol imo. You hear a father saying, sit down. Sit down, sit down, I said sit down, if you don't sit down I'll hit you, please sit down, sit down! That's a ben seira remora. What? Who produced him? Where does he come from? He comes from an isho senua. He comes from a wife who is not being related to properly by a husband. He comes from a strained marital relationship. And this is an incredible thing because it's absolutely true. Disciplinary problems among children are inevitably a reflection of an inadequate relationship between husband and wife. The child doesn't pick up that the wife respects the husband. There isn't an atmosphere of respect for the husband. If the husband is a melech, if the husband is a king in his home, the kid will listen. If the husband is a nincompoop in his home, the kid won't listen, and quite rightly so, why should he? If the woman is a queen in her home, the kid will listen. And if the woman is a servant in the home, why should he? He's a prince, why should he listen to servants? It's understandable. So the system is you start with a woman getting married to the wrong girl, resulting either because of that or for other reasons in an inadequate husband-wife relationship, which then expresses itself in a ben seret omere, a child asher eno shumea bekol oviv v'kol ima. V'yisruoto, and you've got to warn him, v'lo yishmaleim, and he will not listen. You take this kid who's over the mitzvah, he's a teenager already. You take him to Beis Din, and in front of three people you warn him that if he carries on this way he's going to be killed. Death sentence. Says the Torah, a frightening thing, v'lo yishmaleim, he will not listen. Once a kid is a ben seret omere, and he reaches this kind of age, it's too late. Nothing you can do. Is wrecked. The tofsu boy aviv v'imo. Then what has to happen? Their mother and father have to catch him. So just when you see a husband or a father or a mother running around the table trying to catch a kid, that's a ben seret omere. Now it shouldn't be necessary for a parent to go on his hands and knees crawling around the house to catch a kid. You say, come here, kid. And the kid comes. And if he doesn't, he's a ben seret omere. And if you have to go running around the streets and the place to catch him by his tails and discipline him that way and attach a leash to his neck, otherwise he's not going to behave himself, that's a ben seret omere. So the prophets, they'll catch him, and they bring him to the elders of the city, and they say, our son is a ben seret omere, einenu shomea bekoleinu, he doesn't listen to our voice. By the way, parents are not obligated to bring their children to Beis Din. It's their option. If they want to, they can. If they want to be mochel, they can too. If they bring it to the Beis Din, that's what they say. Zolel the surveyor, he's already stealing food. When he steals meat and wine, that's when we get particularly worried. He starts stealing meat and wine. This is a man who for his tummy can't control himself. He doesn't have a sense of right and wrong. Why doesn't he have a sense of right and wrong? Because it wasn't imposed by parents. Parents are there to teach the child or to create for the child the tension between want and right. That's all. If you have an inefficient parent, the child sees no barrier between what he wants and what is right. What he wants is right. What is right is what he wants. A parent is there to pull that apart and to teach a child very dramatically and very early that there's what you want and there's what is right. And this house operates on the basis of what is right, not on the basis of what you want. You don't want to go to bed, that's tough luck. Kids your age are in bed at 7 o'clock or 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock and that's when you're in bed. Take it or leave it. You adjust to our lives. We're not adjusting to yours. I don't want to. I want to stay awake. My job is to teach you that what you want is not necessarily what you'll get. Now, the quicker you'll make peace with that, the quicker we'll be friends. And until you make peace with that, we won't be friends. And believe you me, it takes one or two nights and the father and the child are friends again. Because the kid understands it for you. A child who's stealing food because he wants to put it into his stomach is a child who has never been taught the difference between what is right and what he wants. And at that stage, the Torah says he gets the death sentence. Because there's nothing you can do. You can't educate him. You can't send him to reformatory. He is guaranteed to land up a gangster. He's guaranteed to land up a person who ultimately, in the next sentence, if an adult commits a capital offense, then he must be put to death. This little kid that we're looking at now is a 13-year-old little kid. Is a man who's going to ultimately do something which is deserving of death. Rather, let's put him away now, before he does the damage. Why let him kill somebody? Then we'll have to kill him after he's done the damage. Let's get in before. There's never been a ben seret omere. There's never been a parent who's brought a child to Beis Din and had this done. This is in the Torah to teach us the concept of a ben seret. The concept is there, all over the place. The concept of a child who's a product of a marriage which is not 100%. The child who's the product of parents who are incompetent in terms of teaching the child what is right and what is wrong, and teaching them to submit themselves to what is right and what is wrong. They're producing a child who the Torah believes, chas v'sholom, should be executed. He has no value to humanity whatever, and in fact will be destructive and disruptive. Send him to yeshiva. Take him, okay, we'll put him in yeshiva, a 13-year-old kid, we'll lock him up in the best yeshiva, we'll get private teachers for him from morning till night. No ways! There's nothing you can do for this boy. But he comes from a nice family after all. You know, one of the people who married an Ashes Yefat Torah, such a woman that we've been describing, was David HaMelech himself. And Avshalom was the product of that marriage. Avshalom who caused all the trouble later on. Imagine David HaMelech being told when Avshalom was a kid of 13. David HaMelech. Imagine if somebody would say, you know, get rid of Avshalom. My son, he can be a Talmid Chochem. Look what a family he comes from. Look what opportunities he's got. He's a prince. He's a son of the king of Israel. There isn't a child in the kingdom who has more potential than my son. You'd be better to get rid of him. No matter what family you are, no matter what potential the kid has, no matter how clever he is, no matter how handsome he is, if that's what he is, if he's a nenu shomea bekolovi bekolimo, if he doesn't know how to listen to a parent, he's better off chas v'sholem dead. Because this man is going to cause problems later on. And thanks to Dr. Spock and to Eric Fromm, we have an entire generation of Bnei Sorer Emoreh, of people who've been trained not to listen to parents. A whole generation. Can you imagine if that would have been wiped out when it started? What a world the world would be like today. We wouldn't have the kind of nonsense and the problems we've got today. Now they say they made a mistake. They realize now they made a mistake. But it's a whole generation that can't be rectified. A generation is going to carry on raising their children incorrectly. You know what a churban it is, what a destruction it is? So they did it on a national, on an international basis. But we run the risk of doing it on a family basis, of raising these kind of children. We have to be careful. So really that's what we have here. We have the one way of learning, a man who falls in love with a woman he should never have fallen in love with. We do all we can to talk him out of it. We create a shock situation to show him what's going on and to shock him out of it. If he doesn't, if he goes ahead with it, he must know his relationship with his woman is not going to be adequate because he married her without seeing her properly. If you marry somebody you didn't see properly, you could have gone out with her for 10 years. It doesn't matter. That's why we've got so many divorces from couples who lived together for a couple of years before they got married. It doesn't matter. When you're in love, you don't see. V'ra'isa, you've got to see. You didn't see and you married her nevertheless, you must know she'll become a snua. You must know you will begin to resent her. You begin to resent her, you must know that you'll start looking around for somebody else. You must know that the product of that marriage will be a Ben Sorer marriage. We developed it a little bit further and we said it's not only an Eishes Yefat Torah, it's not only a woman that one shouldn't have married. But Chas v'Sholom, one can have a situation where you've married a woman who was perfectly adequate and somebody you should have married. But she behaves like an Eishes, like we want this Eishes Yefat Torah to behave. A woman who was extremely attractive, a couple who were very much in love, and she neglects herself. The result of that is exactly the same. She becomes a sunua, she becomes rejected and resented. He starts looking around elsewhere. They produce children who are b'nai sore ramore, children who realize that husband and wife don't respect one another, that mother and father don't respect one another, and therefore why should they respect either of them? And from that we have the production of children that the world would be better off without. Frightening thought and a frightening concept. And then of course we have the beautiful Orachaim that can be taken on a different level too. But these are tzaddikim who are out at war. And when a tzaddik is out at war doing a mitzvah like fighting a war and he falls in love with a girl, that's because the girl has something real. And don't think that falling in love is always a bad sign. Depends what level you are when you fall in love. If you're a tzaddik doing mitzvahs when you fall in love, you're probably falling in love with the right stuff. We bring the girl home. They have one relationship in case it was just something superficial that was there, that was kedusha in her, that was holy in her. After that, he still seems to like her. So we put her through the process of avelus, of mourning for her past, during which time she has to come to terms with cutting off from her past. He has to see her in drab situations. And if they still like each other after that, it's again a sign that what he's attracted to is not just her superficial beauty, but this tzaddik is attracted to something very deep inside herself. And when one's operating on that level, one's a tzaddik busy doing a mitzvah, says the Orach Chaim, you don't have to worry that you're being motivated by the Yetzer Hara, not at all. And we have the three systems. You can get yourself to a level where you're free of the Yetzer Hara, momentarily. I don't even say that we can all do it all the time. But momentarily we can get ourselves to those levels. We can experience times when we're sitting at a shir, when we're busy analyzing a gemara, when we're learning in depth, when we're doing a mitzvah, when we're giving some charity, when we're thinking what we should be thinking, when we're standing in shul at the end of ne'ilah, whatever it is, each person his own thing. One experiences times when one is free from the yetzer hara. At other times, the Yetzirah is there, it closes an eye. Either go into the Beit HaMedrash, go into your simulator and look at things objectively, or if for one reason or another you can't do that, then strip the Avera, strip the transgression of all its romance and of all its attractiveness. Look at its essential, what it really is in essence, and see whether you still feel attracted to it, and that will enable one to handle it properly. That's really it. We've combined the last 2 weeks of what the Yetzirah is, how to handle it using the simulator, and more important tonight, how to avoid it, just using the achievement of a certain level.